is Pearland Podcast. Not that I'm in LA. I am in the Weisman Foundation. I am here together with Billy Weisman, one of my dearest friend, and I've known her again for many, many years. And I'm so, so happy that she is joining my podcast today. Billy, can you just give the audience or people who's listening to the podcast about your journey, about who you are?
Well, welcome, Pearl. It's good to see you back in LA. I miss it when you're not here. But anyway, Fred, my husband, Frederick R. Weisman, started the foundation in the mid-80s, and he wanted our home left as living with art in the late 20th century. So all of the paintings, all of the furnishings, everything is as it was when we lived here. And he felt that by having it in a home environment, it would be more welcoming to
living with art.
Uh-huh. And so that's what we've carried on. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1994. So I've been doing it all since then.
But this is the most amazing foundation because you are just walking into it, because it's not like worshiping art, because you're living with art. It's a really different way of feeling with art. Because when I come here, I remember the first time I came here and I saw the Brancusi, really precious Brancusi. Right next to Brancusi is an unknown artist. So what really touches my heart is Fred and you collect art, heart, not value, not branding, not, and you know, so everything is from your heart, which
exactly.
Is the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, when I finished graduate school, I could tell you everything in art, what it was supposed to be, everything chronological. And then Fred taught me, he'd go like this, trust your heart. And it's really, it works.
Because I remember you told me a story about you and Fred was driving along the road, and then you saw, and Fred saw a piece of art or whatever, and you just stopped by and you just bought it. I mean, this is true love. I think, you know, art is about love and passion.
Absolutely.
This house is a great example for a lot of young collectors or collectors who, I always said art is not to be worshipped. Art is to be living with them. And what I walked in here is totally surprising, because you have artworks that artists that don't know, but you have a Rothko. And then the next thing is you have a Larry River, you have Botero outside. It's totally breathtaking. I think whoever comes to LA, if you haven't been to the Weisman Foundation, you're not in LA. It's a seriously amazing, amazing art collection. So let's talk about your beginning. Yeah. And I, you know, when we were talking all these years, I knew that you studied in UCLA, and then after that, you were the conservator in LATMA, right?
After I finished graduate school at UCLA, I was...
You study art history.
Yes. I stumbled into the LA County Museum looking for a job, and there was an opening for research in the conservation department. And myself being very hyperactive, I went through all the desk drawers in the museum, finding spare fingers and toes that had broken off of sculptures, and I found two large piles of photographs of the objects in the museum. And so I started photo files on them, and then I researched adhesives to attach the toes and fingers to the pieces. And there wasn't an objects conservation department when I started.
No. And so, I mean, in LACMA, with all these old artworks, there's no conservation.
Oh, there was a conservator, yes. He was the only conservator.
Oh, one conservator.
Yes, and Ben Johnson. And he was a paintings conservator. But objects
sculpture.
Were left, you know, without anybody paying attention. And I've always been a three-dimensional person.
Yeah.
I love doing that. And so then the head of the Harvard training program came, and I was assigned to work with him for a week. And at the end of the week, he said, would you like to come and be my intern? And I laughed, and he said, why are you laughing? I only take two each year. So I took a leave of absence from the museum, and went to Arthur Beale's training program at Harvard in objects conservation. And then I came back to the museum, and I somewhat started the objects department.
Oh, wow.
And then after that, the following year, I took another leave of absence and went to MIT for metallurgy in order to learn more about the bronze sculpture in the museum.
Oh, how interesting. I mean, and then basically, were you the only one who was doing the being the conservator of objects in LACMA at the time?
Yes, there was a person, George, who was a structural person. He would work on bases and mounting and all of that, and sometimes we'd work together. But, yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
and then when were working with working at Getty?
After I'd been at LACMA for 11 years.
11 years, yeah. Wow!
The Renaissance curator requested that I come to the Getty and to work, and I said no, thank you. I love my work at LACMA, and they kept trying to woo me over, and finally they convinced me, which. It wasn't the happiest time, but no. I got to work on wonderful pieces. It wasn't as open as LACMA was. With sharing information and research, they were more secretive because some of the pieces in the collection were questioned, and they didn't want to talk about that.
Wow. So, and so how long did you stay there?
I think it was like 3 years.
Still 3 years. And do you go back to LACMA after that?
Oh, I didn't go back to work. I had started my freelance business. Because the museum had so much work for conservation, they didn't want us working on the trustees' pieces during working hours. So they let us rent space in the lab, and after hours we could work on our the trustees' pieces. But most of mine were site sculptures, so I was at the trustees' home. Fred Weissman, Eli Broad, Francis Brody, the Starks. I mean, I was at all of the trustees' homes on weekends, so working.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And when do you start collecting art? So it must be starting with your love relationship with Fred, right?
Well, I had bought small pieces along the way, but of course I couldn't afford anything like this. And then I met Fred after I had done a survey of his collection. I met him under a Loser Feitelson painting. And we just got along very well. And a friend of mine said, "What is going on with you and Fred Weissman?" I said, "Jeffrey, nothing's going on with Fred and Mr. Weissman and I." Yeah. And there was definitely a connection there. And everybody could see it but us. And so a couple years later, we finally had dinner alone. It took a long time.
Oh, but it's wonderful because it seems that the whole Weissman Foundation, when it begins or building towards it, and the art collection is really love. It's your relationship with Fred that builds that, this wonderful collection.
Well, look at you with the way you collect art, too. It has to be, it's very passionate,
yeah,
isn't it?
Beautiful, because I mean, upstairs, and then when you go into the room, you have all the pop-up of Fred and a pop-up of you. It's just beautiful. It's a lot of love.
It is. Yeah. It was magical.
So it must be really heartbroken when Fred passed away.
Devastating. But I found that the best way to keep the person alive in your heart is to carry on for them.
Yeah.
And that's why I closed my private business and then just dedicated my life to this foundation.
As a director of the Weissman Foundation, you have been carrying this post for nearly 30 years.
It has been, Pearl.
It has been 30 years.
It has been.
Wow. And then, okay, so how did you, what was the Fred's vision for this contemporary art museum? Are you still buying art? Are you still collecting?
Yes, but not for the house. The house museum stays as it was the day we moved out and moved up the street. What we have always done is when we travel, we purchase art and we do exhibitions in various smaller institutions. And we lend to larger institutions, but we do exhibitions. I just was looking at the list. We've done like over 120 exhibitions since then.
Yeah, because every time when I was talking to you, you said, oh, I'm in Minnesota. I'm in, I don't know where else. And because your exhibition is traveling, right? It's traveling exhibition, and you were curating these exhibitions.
Early on, we did an Asian tour and a European tour, and those were tours. Now we do specific exhibitions for different institutions. It may have the same title, but we like to place them somewhat like we do in the house, in a way where the art speaks to one another in the space.
Dialogue.
And if you use the same exhibition over and over again in different spaces, you can't always create that rapport. So, yeah, I recreate them for each space.
So what is your curatorial perspective on each exhibition? Do you work with the museum and the museum will tell you, museum curator together will tell you the direction, or you just build up your thoughts about it and then you curate towards that direction?
Both ways, but mostly from our position. Mm-hmm. I like to get somewhat of a psychological profile of the community, what the population is, how responsive they are to contemporary art. And then I figure out hooks to draw people in. And we also include local artists in our exhibition.
Amazing.
And we'll put a local artist next to an Ellsworth Kelly or a Warhol or whatever.
Oh, that's great. That's
thereby
great.
Giving credibility to the lesser-known artist. If it holds up, Fred would say, put it there. If it doesn't, don't. So.
Wow. So this has been going on even before Fred passed away.
Oh, yes. The house was never actually even a foundation until many years after he passed away. But when we were living here, the bedroom door would fly open and he'd bring people up through on a tour. I used to be a very private person, but it was like living in a fishbowl. But, and Fred would say, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it beautiful? We need to share. I said, everything, even the master bedroom? He said, oh, yes. So that's the way it is.
I'm always totally flabbergasted because you were collecting art, like upstairs there's a Nanjun Pak. But when you bought Nanjun Pak, who knew Nanjun Pak at that time? No
Fred.
One.
No.
I mean, it's just after he died. I mean, he passed away years after. Then, you know, and then the museum was doing exhibition, curator was writing about it. And all of a sudden, Nanjun Pak was there. But You had it a long time ago. Same thing, I saw this Alan Jones table you have. It's breathtaking.
Fred had an incredible eye. He really did. Even the art dealers say that. The most difficult piece in an exhibition, Fred would gravitate towards and say, I want it.
So have you been now, after Fred passed away, you have your foundation. Is the foundation still collecting?
Yes. We don't have the budget that he did when he was living, but we do still purchase art, and we continue with purchasing emerging artists. Occasionally, at auction, we'll buy a more established artist, but a good example of that is when I bought Art McCracken at auction in New York. Mm. It was a time when nobody in New York was really paying attention to McCracken. So I got a fabulous Pepto-Bismol pink plank. And, I mean, it costs next to nothing, and now the price is so high. But we're not excited when the prices go up. We want it because we love it, and it's nice that we can share it and other people recognize the importance of it.
Because I really enjoy when you take me to all those emerging artists in LA. It was really exciting because I like how you have a great eye. You don't just say about Fred, because you have a great eye, and every time you take me to all the artists, I really totally enjoy it because it's a complete different perspective as well. Well, and I remember I went to your office. And then all of a sudden, I saw the water drop artist, Kim Jong-yu,
yes,
which I had just opened the exhibition. And he was saying to me, I had him. I bought him years ago.
We had him for about 30 years.
Yeah, so it's just, I mean, Billy, you're incredible. I mean, this is how exciting it is. So do you go to every art fair and most of the art fair?
Most of them, yeah.
And then you go around and you see different and artists, even if you don't, I mean, even the foundation doesn't have the full budget to buy established artists, you still go around and see.
Absolutely. You know, when we would go to galleries together, Fred and I, we'd circle around in opposite direction, and both of us would usually go like that, and that would be it. Other times, if I followed him, I would see his fingertips shaking, and I would say, done deal. And sure enough, he would get so excited, it would vibrate to his fingertips.
Wow. Hey, let me ask you then, how many traveling exhibitions do you do each year?
Probably
for the foundation.
Anywhere from 2 to 4, but usually about 3.
And
they're all somewhat unique. I try to alter the titles a bit and alter the pieces also.
This is in America, limited to America.
These days it's America. What happened was the government really changed all of that. We had to destroy all of our crates. We had to use government-stamped wood on the crates. And the crates are so expensive.
So expensive,
I mean, it's a killer. Yeah, so we haven't traveled internationally for a while, but we do travel throughout the United States. I'm currently working on exhibitions in Fort Lauderdale and Oklahoma and Cal State LA. Yeah, different locations. We do quite a bit around LA, though, and they're usually smaller institutions. Not the big ones usually have a whole staff of curators, and they don't want anybody from the outside taking their space.
But you land. I remember even last year, the Mark Rothko show in the Vuitton Museum. You loaned paintings there, right?
Yes.
You loaned your Rothko there.
Absolutely.
So in average, how many works do you loan to international museum and to do shows and all that?
As many as a half a dozen a year, sometimes 3. We're also lending to the Reina Sofia and the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And, Louis Vuitton, again, we're lending to in 2 weeks. We're lending to Wesselman. It's the pop show with Wesselman.
So you're also doing that?
Yeah.
Wow.
So a lot to prepare for.
A lot to prepare. And what is your vision?
My vision is carrying on what Fred's original intention was, which is to keep the foundation, the house museum, as it is, and in perpetuity. And how
could you sustain this to build this, I mean, to build importance in the future, so people will always remember there's a Wiseman Foundation?
Well, as long as it catches a person's eye like yours, people will come back. And then word of mouth. We have, with social media these days, though, we have more people coming than we did before. We never advertised in the past, but we always had people coming through. And actually, we had more international groups coming through than local. Our next-door neighbor, who had lived here for 18 years, had never come in. And I said, "What took you so long?" And she said, "I was afraid to ask." And I said, "Why? It's a public institution. It's a foundation." And so our doors are open, but you have to arrange for a tour by appointment, because we have limited parking inside the gates, and also because it's a house, you have to be guided through on a tour.
So next thing is, are you looking at a younger, you know, when it goes on forever, and so how are you going to groom a director so that you can pass your job to her or him? Because he or she has to have this passion, because you have this great passion.
Oh, that's a hard thing to pass
on. Yes, it's very
hard. You either have it or you don't. And I had the advantage of knowing Fred.
To build the longevity of the foundation. So are you looking for a younger director so that you can guide her or him to carry the torch?
The board has been pressing me for years to find a replacement if I ever wanted to retire or whatever.
Yeah, so you can go traveling with me.
But in the back of my mind, I keep my eye open, and I do have some prospects, and I have them written down in a secret envelope, much like the Academy Award.
And actually, one of the stories I would very much like you to share with the audience is this airplane. It's this private jet that you mentioned Fred has, and it's completely an artist jet that you have in Ed Rocher and Joe Good, right?
Yes.
So can you describe for the audience?
Well, it happened.
This is in 1980s, huh?
Yes. This happened before Fred and I had ever had dinner alone together. I was working at LACMA at the time. I was a young conservator. And he had me working on installing the exhibition in Palm Springs. And I came back, and I couldn't get back there in time for the opening. So his office called and said, Mr. Wiseman wanted to know if you'd like to go on the corporate jet with a group of them to the opening. I said, oh, that would be great, because that way I can get there. I couldn't drive there in time. So I'm on the plane with Mr. Wiseman at the time, the head of Toyota's wife, his former girlfriend, and Rauschenberg and his friend Terry. And Rauschenberg, Fred, and I were sitting in the back of the plane. And I said, Mr. Wiseman, what's a gentleman like you doing flying around on a normal airplane? Remember when Calder had done Braniff Airways? And Rauschenberg said, yes, Fred, why don't you let me paint your corporate plane?
Well, Fred. Well, Rauschenberg said that.
Yeah. And Fred knew exactly what he wanted to do. When we returned from Palm Springs, he asked Ed Rocher to paint the corporate plane. And he did the exterior, and they asked Joe Good to do the interior. So Ed Rocher came up with two models. One was with a sunset, and the other one was in midnight blue with stars. And Fred selected the one in midnight blue with the stars. And then Joe Good did the ceiling with the cloud formation. And afterwards, Fred would say, I live with art, I work with art, and now I fly with art.
Love it.
Working with art, Frank Gehry had done his corporate headquarters, which was he was the one of the first distributors of Toyota in the United States. And he not only had Frank Gehry design the building, but he had contemporary art next to all of the desks. Well, the Japanese were horrified. They said, when are you going to complete the building and this art? And the employees said, do I have to have that next to my desk? And Fred would say, live with it for 3 months, and if you don't like it, I'll be glad to move it. Well, at the end of the trial period, everybody was clinging to their art, as they called it. So it shows you what exposure does. I mean, you really just have to keep looking, and you become more open-minded.
I think what audience has to know, if you have seen the Bilbao in Spain, I mean, the Guggenheim Bilbao in Spain, the first of this museum is built in Minnesota, Minneapolis, is the Wiseman Foundation, is the Wiseman Museum, right?
Absolutely.
This is the first prototype, way before Bilbao has that Guggenheim Museum. Yes. I never knew that, because I was flipping the book, and then I said, how come this one must be built after the Bilbao? And there I saw it was Fred Wiseman,
yeah,
Museum, Foundation or Museum. It was exactly the same.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. He was ahead of his time with everything.
It's completely. That was built when? 1990s?
Actually, it was 80s. I believe it was the late 80s.
Well, and when did the Bilbao built? It's 1990s or 2000, I can only.
Yeah, it was much later.
Yeah, yours, wow. So what is that foundation now doing? The Wiseman Foundation in...
Oh, it's a museum. They actually have...
You donated.
We donated artworks to them. But no institution likes somebody from the outside telling them what to do.
Yes.
So we've loosened our reins, and they get to do what they want. They curate their own exhibitions and all. Occasionally, we will do an exhibition with them. And the same with the Wiseman Museum at Pepperdine University.
Oh, yes.
The same thing.
But I remember... There was one exhibition that you brought into the Pepperdine, the Wiseman Museum.
We used to do an annual exhibition.
Yeah.
Yeah, for 29 years we did it. Whoa. And they have new direction now, and we're not doing them as frequently. I'm not sure when the next one would ever be. But yeah, but we've developed relationships with a lot of the other institutions. There was a Carnegie Museum up in...
In Pittsburgh.
No, there's one in California, between here and Santa Barbara. And we were doing annual shows there. And we've developed a very nice relationship with Cal State LA. And we've done with Cal State Northridge. And the Santa Monica had a museum. Oh, they have a museum. We've done a couple shows with them. And wherever people ask, we'll figure out how to do a show for them.
How exciting. So, but Billy, you do travel a lot.
I do.
Because I see you everywhere. Next week, I'm going to see you in London as well. Well, and then, I mean, you travel everything and you work from morning to night. Do you feel tired?
I'm energized from it.
But it's true, because when I came in there, sometimes we just jumped from one studio to another studio, and you were showing me all around. But LA recently has changed a lot. It seems that LA today becoming the art center of USA, fighting and competing with New York. Many artists has moved to LA to set up their studio, and all these international galleries, they all have the outposts here. What are you thinking about LA? Do you think Los Angeles would really be able to take over from New York?
Haven't we already?
I think so. So it's very exciting here now. Now, but we always say there still is not enough collectors. Because collectors are still, I mean, there are more collectors in San Francisco, New York. LA still doesn't, they don't have that number of collectors. Is that true?
Quality, not quantity. And not sure.
And what do you think about the museums then, compared to New York?
Oh, of course, New York has fabulous museums. They always will. I mean, they could surpass almost anywhere in the world. But I'm very proud of what LACMA is doing with Michael Govan, with MoCA, and with the Broad Foundation, and with the museum in Westwood, the Hammer.
Hammer has done really well.
Mm-hmm, with Annie Philbin. Yeah. I mean, they've done wonders, yeah. No, we're doing it. I mean, we're starting from scratch. New York had, 100 years over us, and we're trying to catch up.
Because before, when we talk about private museum, we are talking about the Wiseman and the Broad. And the Broad, of course, now is a big establishment. Mm-hmm. Has Wiseman Foundation ever thought that they would build something like Broad?
We had talked about it early on, in fact, but Fred always wanted the concept of a house museum. We had looked into the Doheny Estate in Beverly Hills to move it, the foundation there, but there were too many restrictions, so we didn't do it. I don't think we ever will, unless there's problems with being a house museum in a residential area. But we seem to follow more rules than anybody in the street. So I think we'll probably be here forever.
I was told that you're going to build an annex right next to to the main house. Can you tell us something more about it?
That was another one of those things. I used to tease Fred after we were together. I said, we have the fanciest gardener shed in the city. It was a beige stucco building with a red tiled roof and this big piece of property. And I said, why not build a sculpture garden or a gallery? And he looked at me and said, well, why not both? And so we interviewed Frank Gehry, and Frank said, Fred, I'm already working on so many projects for you. The University of Minnesota Museum, and he was all over the place. Fred was commissioning him to do things. And he said, well, why not Franklin Israel? And so we interviewed him and selected him under Frank Gehry's suggestion. And I especially worked closely with him designing it. And actually, all the papers for that are in the Getty Archives. So we're really happy with the building because we have a...
Yeah, because you have your office and another exhibition space.
Uh-huh.
And your Keith Haring motorbike is there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, when those arrived, an art dealer brought them on a flatbedded truck, and there were five on the truck.
Five?
Keith Haring and L.A. 2, Days. I mean, there were five of them. It was a done deal. We had one everywhere.
Bravo. I love it.
The fingers were really twitching at that point.
On this point, then, I must say thank you, Billy. And I see you for dinner. No, and I thank you for giving such precious time to join me on the podcast. Thank you, Pearl. You
are such a jewel to the whole art world. Everybody enjoys you. You are so generous with your time and generosity.
Sharing your journey and your experience with the audience. Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Pearl.
Thank you.